This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, how do you like them apples? That's a little, I keep forgetting, from Michael McDonald, from the original Soul Train in the 1970s. Yes, when afros were hot and people used to know what they were doing when they were dancing and they'd all do it together at the same time.
Yeah, Michael McDonald, he just looks like the kind of guy who was sitting in like a white picket fence house with a wife and two kids. He took a wrong turn, ended up in a jazz bar, and suddenly he just started singing.
Yeah, and it worked.
And it worked, and everyone's like, who's this honky? And then all of a sudden, he just delivers.
Yeah, and like, we could get down to this. It's very nice. All right, let's, speaking of getting down, I hope justice is on his way. We're struggling to get hold of him this morning, and sometimes this happens. I don't know why. Like, we've suspected for a long time justice is involved in, like, a parallel career in the underground. Ben always surmised that he is involved in political assassinations and things, but we have
I never said they're political, but he definitely probably does take
like
lives.
Like a James Bond.
Yeah. But then again, you guys poo-poo my theory for some reason.
Because we have no evidence, Ben. It's a pretty good reason to poo-poo a theory.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want me to do? Incriminate the guy, then we'd lose him for life.
No, the problem is justice, if he's that good that he leaves no clues, which is probably what you think, then
do you guys ever notice, I brought this up before, when Justice walks into the studio, he gives all of you a smile. He gives me a knowing look because he knows that I know.
You're onto him.
That I know.
And then you're not afraid for your life?
It's too late in the game for that, huh?
Okay.
All right. Before we get stuck into the news, I mentioned earlier that I had a clip of Thabo Mbeki talking about land. And a lot of people are suddenly coming around to the fact that, hey, this Thabo Mbeki might have had some good ideas. It took 9 years of the cretinous Jacob Zuma for us to realize that Thabo Mbeki had a lot between his ears. This is how dumb people are.
Yep, he had a lot to offer.
Yeah, and we woke up to this, including me. I mean, I'm happy to admit that I thought that Thabo Mbeki was centralizing power around himself at a certain stage and that he was becoming the kind of centrist who wanted to create not only the capable state that Helen Zille always talks about, which to some people would be a noble thing. To me, it would be a scary thing because the capable state means there are incapable people in it usually. But Thabo Mbeki had good ideas. And around certain things anyway, it's worth re-examining what he had to say. Here's what he had to say about land. Since land is something everybody's talking about at the moment, it was just debated in Parliament yesterday with Cyril Ramaphosa taking questions and comments and dealing with all the political parties. So you listen to Thabo. And then I want your thoughts on this. Tell me if you think he makes a good point, if you think that he's talking nonsense. Here is former President Thabo Mbeki, right?
There's a report in the media about Malmesbury in the Western Cape. There's a farmer there who abandons a farm because the soil has got exhausted and so on, and it would take too much money to put in fertilizer and so on. So he lends it to lie fallow. Five Africans, they approach him, they buy a cow from him. They were going to slaughter it. And they learn about this farm which is lying fallow. And they talk to him, and he tells them that this farm is, the land is bad. So I really have to leave it there, and well, I'll see about it tomorrow. So they say to him, but can we use it? So he says, but I told you, the soil is exhausted, you can't. So they insist. They say no. Then he says, okay, you can use it. So they take the farm, and they've been announced the South African Farmer of the Year in the Western Cape. It's five Africans. And to show the pictures, the vegetables have grown, and they say the trick was to use manure. So they went and collected the manure from the farmer and from his cattle and did it instead of chemical fertilizer. And the farm is thriving. Now, that's a good story to tell. Because it's Africans. But it's Zimbabweans. It's not any South African who went to the farmer to say, can I use your farm? But the Zimbabweans did. Because the Zimbabweans have got a very different attitude to land. That's why you find here many, many times you get the land settlements. People make land claims. They get the land. Instead, they say, no, rather than take the land, give us money. So I'm saying that even when we talk about the land issue, one has got to understand this thing quite seriously. What is the nature of the issue? It isn't urban land the more urgent issue in the country? It may very well be, rather than agricultural land. If you look at the record of the land claims that have been settled over the last 22 years, you will find that in the majority of cases, the people who win the claim, they prefer to take the money rather than keep the land and work the land. That's the reality of South Africa. The Zimbabweans have got a very, very different attitude towards land from what our people have. So I wasn't at all surprised to read the story that in Malmesbury in the Western Cape, you got 5 Zimbabweans. Incidentally, I should have said this, all of them are university graduates in mathematics, in physics, in sciences. They are teaching at schools there, and they do the farming over weekends. This is the objective reality of our country.
Now, I mean, I thought that was fascinating from a number of points of view, because first of all, he's talking about a very specific case in Malmesbury in the Western Cape, and turns out this farm is still thriving. And not surprisingly, these guys are scientists. They applied their minds to it. Farming is very, very scientific these days. It's not just something where you know, like you and me might have vegetable patches. And we grow a couple of things there that we put into a salad every now and then. But for large-scale commercial farmers, it's a very scientific endeavor. It's a technological endeavor. It's expensive, too. So these guys work a normal job. They teach at the schools in the area. And then on the weekends and whenever they've got time, they run their farm. 5 of them, university graduates from Zimbabwe. And they're running this farm very successfully, which first of all flies in the face of the white farmer who said, oh, this land is fallow, there's nothing you can do with it, because they've proven you can. But second of all, they've proven that you need certain skills to be able to do this properly. So everybody's got to, as Thabo Mbeki says, apply their minds to the South African reality. Is that we've got this very weird attitude to land in South Africa, and it's obviously as a result of our past. And believe me, white people could do a lot in terms of, I saw this in an article from Professor Jonathan Janssen, white people could do a lot to be a little bit more thoughtful and careful when they start speaking about property and land like it's a given, because it never was for black people. But Thabo Mbeki here making a very valid point about urban land. Why are we so worried about agricultural land? Who wants these pieces of the Southern Free State, the Northern Cape? You know, these huge tracts of land that need management and maintenance and fences and irrigation. And I don't want to run that. If you gave me one of those farms, I'd sell it too. So we've got to look at what the reality is for so many people before we start throwing around our own opinions. Everybody's got an opinion about this. I don't know. I haven't done enough research about this. But you walk down the street, every South African's got an opinion on land. Everybody. Educated people, uneducated people, people who are in farming, people who are not. Political scientists. This is not a political thing. You have to be one of those people who loves working the land to understand this. And very few people do. That's why farming is not what people do mostly anymore. It's a very rare, you know, sort of scarce job opening for many people. And there's not a lot of people studying agriculture. And those are the people who we need to listen to, not the politicians. The politicians are going to try and make the system work in a certain direction or in another direction. And as I said, I'm pleased to see that in Parliament they're talking about this sensibly and instead of shouting at each other the whole time. But this is a long road that we have to walk in terms of getting land right. And it's not acceptable that so many people in this country don't own a single piece of property. But then that's the case all over the world.
Yeah, exactly.
They say 2% of the world's population owns all the land. Yeah. 2%. And that's true in money, too. 2% of the world's population has most of the money. Of course that's unfair, but that's the way clearly it works. It's a law of nature by the looks of things. It's what they call Oh God, there's this term for it. I'll look it up because I don't want to get this wrong. But it seems that, you know, it's kind of like that 80-20 rule that 20% of your clients generate 80% of your revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that you should focus on those 20% because then you'll make a successful business rather than worrying about the other 80% who only bring in 20% of the money. It's the same kind of thing. There's always going to be this imbalance. But we've got to do things in South Africa to kind of just attempt to restore some kind of balance to the situation, at least in respect of avoiding a revolution. Because if poor, desperate people keep on being poor and desperate, eventually they're going to say, well, let's set this thing on fire. We don't have to put up with this. That's what everybody's got to avoid. And the answer isn't knee-jerk reactions. And isn't everyone with an opinion, uninformed opinion, stepping forward. It's all of us just listening to each other a little bit more. Not being hysterical. You know, oh, this means the end of white farming property in South Africa. It's nonsense. It's also not what Julius says it is, which is like, you know, cut the throat of whiteness. I mean, this is not the kind of conversation that either side should be having. Conversation is, do we build something together? Or do we keep trying to cut each other out? It's madness. Keep making the same mistakes. Yo. Anyway, Thabo Mbeki adding some sense to the discussion. There's one of the politicians who seems to have a handle on how complex this story is. What did you think of him?
I'm exhausted.
Are you?
Yeah.
But this needs discussion. You understand.
I understand. Yeah. It needs discussion, but yo, I'm fucking exhausted, hey?
It's nice to hear some sensibility for once, though.
And it's interesting how, like, the conversation, the tone of the conversation gets different depending on whether you're in the company of white people or whether you're in the company of black people or whether you're in the company where all of us are there together.
Yeah.
The tone is so different each time.
So right. But it's the number one, like, you know how a couple of months ago everybody was talking about CrossFit or...
yeah.
Or cryptocurrencies or Jacob Zuma, right?
It overwhelms me, and I think that's why I'm mentally exhausted.
Tired of talking.
I'm mentally exhausted.
I totally understand that, but I think we be hearing the same crap over and over and over, what T-Boss was saying there.
I'm sorry, I didn't know you and him were like...
Yeah, they're that close.
We're homies. Tabo, like
hang, Tabo and Ben hang out in Killarney together, and he smokes his pipe and Ben chills.
Okay. Oh,
T-Boss. But didn't you guys...
Sometimes Gary plays... Pops by.
There was something so interesting about what he said there is like, what do you actually want from the land? Because in a lot of instances, people just want the money. So the land is being used as just like, well, I want money. So at least be honest about the stuff. I mean, I've got no problem with people discussing these things and wanting to claim whatever it is. But have the right reason. Stop have this lie. Like, if you want the land to work it, cool. That's a separate kind of claim. If you just want money, then it's also a different kind of claim. Because, you know, it's all about prioritizing who gets what. This is what it all comes down to. That's why these things aren't feasible.
Here's that term I was looking for, and thank you to Graham for reminding me what it is. It's called the Pareto distribution. You heard of this?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, so this is named after an Italian engineer and economist. It's a power law probability distribution used to describe social, scientific, geophysical, actuarial, and many other kinds of observable phenomena. So it cuts across. This is not a human behavioral thing. It happens in the universe too. The best way to describe it is that it's close to that 80-20 rule that I was saying. Success makes success makes success. So what happens is, if you're Elon Musk or you're Carlos Slim or you're Bill Gates or you're Warren Buffett, your success fuels more success and you end up accelerating into super success. And someone who is extremely poor and doesn't have any resources is likely to descend into ever worse poverty. In other words, it's never going to be equal. It's never going to be fair. It's never going to be completely distributed 50-50 across the board for everyone. What you want to do is you want to find yourself as close to that 20% that ends up making 80% of the money as possible. And obviously for some people it works, for other people it doesn't. So it works in exponential distribution, in geometry, it works in human behavior. It's pretty much everywhere. And there's an equation for this, since we started talking about science earlier on. And everybody seems to have an interpretation around the Pareto distribution, which I think if you really want to understand society, this is one worth looking at, rather than ideological stuff that you can't make happen because it goes against the laws of mathematics and science and nature and geography and all these things. I mean, if the universe obeys these laws, what chance do you have as a human to turn them on their heads? Anyway, let's move on, because I think this land thing, as my buddy says, many people are just exhausted around it. What else is going on in the news? Justice, by the way, we've got no sign of him. C has been trying to call him all morning. He's either on a job, in inverted commas, like Ben said.
Oh, no inverted commas.
Or he's just he's ignoring us, or he had a big night last night and he's overslept. I don't know. We'll find out.
Let's talk about United Airlines, shall we?
American, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
These guys, it is like they are just trying to be shit. They're actually trying. They're sitting down and going, right, how are we messing up our name this month?
Last time we heard of them, were they the ones who had that guy who was dragged off the flight?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Just extracted like a like a cancerous cyst. And
have you ever flown on United? Because I have, and it's awful.
Well, yes. I remember you mentioning it, yeah. So this has got to do with canines. So dog lovers, I apologize if the story is a bit grim for you. United Airlines have a policy. If your dog is small enough to fly in a kennel, it can fly with you in the cabin, just slide underneath the chair and everything's going to be okay. Some air hostess told someone, no, you must put your dog in the overhead cabin.
What?
There's a lot of holes and questions to the story, right? So the person's instructed to put the dog in the overhead cabin. 3 hours later, surprise, surprise, dog's no longer. The dog's dead.
But why did he listen to her?
Exactly. There's two parts of the story. A lot of dumb people fly United, clearly, because it's a stupid airline. But they were instructed to put this thing up there, forced to do it, whatever it is. They put the dog up there. The dog dies on the plane.
As the human as well, you think your dog would survive 3 hours?
But hang on.
Why would you put your dog in overhead?
The overhead stowage is...
No airflow, really.
No. But the overhead stowage, I mean, I understand it's closed, but it's mostly the same air as what's in the cabin. It's not sealed off. So the dog might have died from a number of things. It might not have been asphyxiation or...
Well, either way, Gareth, not...
But the dog's dead, I understand.
Not first choice place to put a dog, essentially.
Okay. Got you.
Then yesterday, another story broke that somebody was transporting their German Shepherd, bigger dog, goes into the hold, that kind of stuff. This is a different kind of dog transportation.
On United as well.
On United Airlines, the dog was scheduled to have a short little flight, end up in Kansas City. Where's the dog?
Gone. Dead.
Japan.
Oh, Jesus.
How? How? Dogs just somewhere in Japan. Like.
Oh, no, that poor thing.
How do they justify it?
No, it's kind of like when your luggage it ends up in a different destination. The dog ended up in a different destination.
Jeez, that's a mess.
No, it seems like United is really just trying their utmost best.
Well, they are crap. I mean, United is like, it's really United and American Airlines, which are the big airlines in America. There's Southwest, and there are a whole bunch of smaller ones that also run a lot of the routes. And there are a ton of small airlines because they're all privatized. There's no national airline in America. And, you know, there's an argument to be made for that because they cut prices and you pay for everything, by the way. If you want legroom or a little more legroom or a little... more legroom, you can get them. But let me tell you, you don't want to pay. Like, if you get business class in South African Airways, it's nice. It feels better than economy.
Mm-hmm.
Business class on United or American Airlines is not that much better. It's really not.
People are they just speak to you nicer.
No, well, they've got these old crones
that's a thing.
Stewardesses. Old crones. These women, you could blow them over with a. If you shouted at them, they'd fall down the aisle and roll all the way back to the cockpit. They are on the verge of death, some of these women. And the reason that they work as air hostesses is because they have been like club members of United or American, and then they suddenly need to get a certain number of points to become lifetime members, and that gives them free flights and so on. So when they're older, they can travel around America.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to get their points, so they become an air hostess so that they can get these. Yeah, that's what they do it for. Because I always wondered, like, why are they hiring these old crones? That's why. So they can get these free miles. They'll give them free trips around America. That's why they do it. It took me ages to discover this. I eventually asked someone who works in airlines.
Oi, why are you so old and working?
Yeah. No, I didn't ask them.
Hey, grandma, come over here. I've got a question for
you. And they are grumpy. Because these women have been, I don't know, accountants and doctors and secretaries and lawyers. I don't know what they were before they became these stewardesses. So they don't really love the job. They're doing it for maybe 6 months, maybe a year. Then they get the points and they're out. So they, you want peanuts? Oh, okay. $5 for peanuts. $5 for peanuts. You don't want them? You don't have to have them.
Oh, jeez.
You want to get up and go to the toilet again. Oh, they're horrible.
The only thing I'll give to United. Did you hear about the story of the peacock?
No.
It was back in Jan when a woman was flying on United Airlines and was claiming that she needed to fly with her peacock for emotional support.
These emotional support animals.
So, yes.
Okay.
So
this is a real thing, by the way.
Yeah, she went in and she was trying to check in for herself, and people were like, "What is going on?" And the peacock was like perched on her shoulder.
A peacock is not a small, but it has a very long tail. If you've seen a peacock, you know
it's not something that needs to be in a confined space either.
And you can't really store it in the overhead luggage either.
Isn't the male one the one with the theatrics when the tail opens?
Well, a peacock. She wants to get in your car, honey.
Oh, man.
I tell you what, in a few years' time, United are going to have a tough task with my emotional woolly mammoth that I'm going to take on board.
Because Ben's waiting for them to genetically engineer a woolly mammoth for him.
Yes.
My emotional support woolly mammoth is going to cause a stir.
Okay. Oh.
You bet.
So you're just going to cuddle with it the entire flight. Got you. So dumb.
Look, if you're in America, there are lots of options.
Well, cars aren't exactly a best option or the better option to look at, because Ford in North America is now recalling more cars.
Yeah, but you know what? This happens in so many different parts of the world, and it happens so often.
Nearly 1.4 million mid-size Ford cars in North America are being recalled because the steering wheels can detach from the steering column and drivers can lose control.
That's like F1.
Holy shit.
That's just like F1 cars. That's so cool.
Wow, guys.
It'll detach. Which cars are these? Let's just be clear.
The recall covers certain Ford Fusion and Lincoln MKZ
that's
cars.
It's kind of ironic the name, like Fusion, has a detachable.
From 2014 through to 2018. So Ford says Ford says that the steering wheel bolts can loosen.
Oh my god.
And the company says it knows of two crashes and one injury caused by the problem so far.
Gideon Sam says it's small numbers, huh?
Can you imagine while you are making your next left turn and then all of a sudden the steering wheel just comes off? What do you do?
Well, in the greater Ford context, I don't know if this is better or worse than if you're sitting in your car and your car starts to go up in flames.
Yeah.
God, I'd shit myself. Oh, well, what do you do?
Scream?
Because now you can't steer. You cannot steer. You better be going slowly, and you better be able to grind to a halt like the Big Lebowski when he goes into that rubbish bin. Otherwise, you're dead.
But if you just applied brakes and not panic, you'd be fine, right?
But if you're
on the highway?
Yeah.
I mean,
slow down.
Yeah, but...
And then, yeah.
What if your car most cars don't have great wheel alignment.
You
could be drifting left or right. Now you can't do anything to correct that.
Yeah, because the steering is no longer in your control.
I'd actually think it's better if you were going straight. If you were mid-turn.
Yes.
Because that's when the nuts would loosen as well.
Oh, my
God. If
you're mid-turn, no, then you're dead.
You can't even brake because you'll just...
You'll spin out of control.
Jeez, I feel
bad
for
great work, Ford.
Have you guys heard of a company called Nectone?
Oh, sorry. Oh, I just read up more on the story.
Oh, okay. Sorry. See, I've got more.
So, yes, here are the cases that were raised. The safety agency who brought up this whole recall said in documents that it began the probe after receiving three complaints, including one from a driver from Georgia who reported that the steering wheel in his 2015 Fusion fell into their lap when turning into a gas station.
Talk about a sinking feeling.
If you were to drive into the petrol pump because you couldn't steer away, what would have happened then? Two other people reported that the bolt attaching the wheel to the steering column came loose while driving and had to be retightened, at least, luckily for them, at a repair shop. So, shucks. Ford.
What is happening, dude? They have, like, the best games room ever, that Ford factory. Like, people are taking breaks and...
Yeah, I'm just...
Oh, they're showing porn on the TV.
They're not getting enough sleep, that's for sure.
Yeah, because surely these vehicle manufacturers have to run a bajillion different tests on all the...
With machines.
Look, you'd think, like, a few things slip through the cracks, but your steering column bolts coming undone? That's like a non-negotiable.
I'd rather feel an extra spring in my seat than to lose my steering wheel.
All right.
Okay. All
right, that's enough to think about. I'm nervous as hell now.
This
don't drive a Ford, but... Jeez.
This next story makes me nervous. So, Nectome. You ever heard of Nectome?
Nectome. I know what a nectarine is. I know what nectar is.
Okay.
Is it related to those?
No, it's not related to any of that, Gareth. No. They are a startup company that says that they can upload the contents of a person's brain and store it on a computer.
Oh, I love this.
What? Okay.
It means they can wake up your consciousness once they've discovered a way to inject it back into a body.
But would you be first in line, Gareth, put up your brain
Look, you're gonna this is a no-risk situation because they upload my brain. Hopefully there's no damage to the existing brain, so it's like making a copy. You know, you copy and paste a file on a computer?
They do this while you're still alive.
I don't know. This is the first I heard of it. So I don't know. But I'm imagining if it's a copy and paste, the worst that can happen is the copy isn't done properly, but I remain as is, right? If there's a danger that they're going to have to knock me out or that it might copy a piece across that I still need, that they, instead of just copying, they actually cut and paste it, then I'm not happy.
Okay.
I want this file intact. If you can copy it intact, sure.
Okay. The slight little fine print in this agreement that you're signing, Gareth, is that you will have to die.
Okay, no.
A Silicon Valley tech billionaire wants to pay $10,000 to be killed so that his brain can be preserved forever.
Knock yourself out, dude.
His name is Sam Altman. He is 25 years old and he is an entrepreneur. Sorry, okay. He's not 25. He is one of 25 people on a waiting list at Nectome, who all want their brains to be stored in a computer. But in exchange for eternally preserving his mind, the 32-year-old will have to die in a process that is similar to physician-assisted suicide. It is only legal in 5 states in the U.S. Somewhat ironically, the company that Altman founded, Y Combinator, funds startup companies like Nectome. So the process that he wants to sign up for involves embalming the brain so it can be later simulated onto a computer. So the customer, who is alive, is hooked up to a machine and then they get injected with Nectome's embalming chemicals. The company said that this method is 100% fatal.
I mean...
Ben is laughing!
Because they don't just said fatal, 100% fatal.
No, they do it for dramatic effect. So this guy is one of 25 who are on a waiting list because they want to die so that their brains can be uploaded onto a computer.
Are there no attractive women in Silicon Valley? I mean, these guys don't have hobbies. Are there no golf courses or anything?
Let me tell you, I read a fascinating thing in the Vanity Fair magazine 2-3 months ago about how in Silicon Valley, it's just like swinger city. These people are wife swapping and partner swapping and they have orgies and they're bored. Look this up. I'm not making it up. These rich people who are on the forefront of designing our futures are all banging each other's brains out every weekend. That should make you nervous.
Are they doing that as a kind of stress reliever? Because they do, you know, they do work hard.
Well, a lot of them are lying for a startup. They go, well, I've got this billion-dollar startup. And women are going, oh, that's amazing. Let's have sex. And then that's how these guys are having sex. And then suddenly some of them do become rich.
Go and read the article. Vanity Fair magazine. I think it was December. Phew. Just sex, 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 and then a little bit of tech.
Oh, a little bit. You know, years ago, lifetimes ago, there was survival of the fittest where really, as you always say, Gareth, it was the fastest in the pack and the strongest in the pack who would survive. Nowadays, I feel like this is the survival of, well, not even survival of the fittest. This is evolution. How about we just kill off all 25 of those people? You obviously just want to die, so go ahead.
Well, if someone wants to die, don't get in their way.
Minimum of 25 people are fine.
Yeah,
with
but
just
there's a
dying.
Lot of there's a lot of red tape because you know the law says that you can't help somebody kill themselves. That's the problem with life is the red tape.
Yeah, but this is you own your meat. You should be able to do what you want with it. And if you want to end the story, you're allowed to close the book and end the story. You should be allowed to. And no government or church or family member should be able to stop you. Sorry. It's not your meat. You don't own that meat. It's that person's. If these guys, in 25 of them?
Yeah,
25. If they're going to do this and they're going to figure out a way for the rest of us to upload our consciousness and store it indefinitely, a perfect copy of our brains and our beings, oh, hell yes. Let these 25 be the guinea pigs. Go, guys.
What are the pros of...
We love you. It's like the Mars mission. Do it. Do it for humanity.
What are the pros of something like this?
Sia, if you can download your consciousness or upload it to a server and store it somewhere, you can come back from the dead inhabiting a new body. Ultimately, that's going to be the complicated thing, is how do you get it out and how do you put it back in? You know, how do you download something that isn't an electronic file and turn it into an electronic file? And how do you take that electronic file and then put it back into a biological creature, a body? Maybe you want to live on the internet. You've seen that movie, She?
I've heard of it.
You need to see this movie. Point being, it's immortality. You never, ever need to die.
So is
but it's
your
immortality as a hard drive.
So what? What, you think you're so special as a meat vehicle? Like, as a primate?
Yes.
You think being a primate's better than being a hard drive? I think being a hard drive is a little more sophisticated.
I wonder though, so if they were to plant your brain elsewhere,
your identity could be put into a chimp. Still
be Gareth.
Well, Ben would come back as the mammoth, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
He's obsessed with mammoths, Ben. But you could put your consciousness into a chimp. Who knows if it has the capacity to hold that consciousness? Again, if the hardware is good enough for the software to download, why not?
Just imagine me outside that window as a mammoth. It'd be brilliant because I would be two stories tall. And I would just trumpet from the side of like certain things.
It would just... But,
I'll be like catching hardy dogs with my tusks and throwing them in here.
Imagine Ben hanging around outside the studio as a mammoth.
Say, so
guys, where's Ben? Oh, I can hear him coming down the road. There are a bunch of cars that have been just flung around.
I'll be fighting Jane through the window.
Yeah, you will. It'll be terrific.
So what would the risks involved be, though, if you were existing as data on a machine? I mean...
Someone could hack you and then
Someone could hack you. That's the risk.
Someone could switch your machine off.
Somebody could lose you when you lose data. Like, you know when you... Like when data just gets lost and you're like, damn it.
All right, your system has to be formatted?
Yeah, okay.
Like
you guys are talking like you're copying a Nokia phone. Yeah. Okay, stop. It used to be really difficult for us to go and buy a new handset and transfer all our contacts, for example. Used to be difficult. Mm-hmm. Now it's a piece of cake. Mubs did it in what? They did it at the shop for you.
Mm-mm.
You did it yourself?
Yeah.
Okay, so you just transferred all of your data from one phone to another phone.
Yeah.
It was pretty seamless.
Yes.
Before, that was a nightmare. Some of your contacts would copy, others wouldn't. So these 25 people, let them take the risk. Let them get this right. It's going to take a couple of years. It's faster than you think, though. Let these guys be the first set of people to try. There will be casualties.
there will be casualties.
Some of this will be lost. Some of these people will be downloaded imperfectly and uploaded on the other side even worse. So it's going to be a mess. But in the long term, you're going to be able to copy from one phone to another. And you'll be able to inhabit another body. I mean, this is very science fiction.
Mm.
But a lot of science fiction has turned into fact. Stuff that they were talking about 50 years ago. Suddenly, we have iPads. Just hang in there. Like, science is your friend, provided you don't use it for evil. And this will be used for evil by some people. It's like genetic engineering will be used for evil by some people. And, you know, computers are used for evil, and cryptocurrencies are used for evil, and all kinds of things can be turned to evil by evil people. But that evil doesn't come from the machine. It comes from the person with the malicious intent. If Ben wants to be a woolly mammoth when he comes back from the dead, as long as he's not going to hurt anybody, why would anyone be opposed to that?
Exactly. You know, it's
ridiculous. Well, but honestly, okay.
I mean, we spoke about the pedophiles, but that'd be fine.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would be opposed to you, you know, sitting on a pedophile's head as a mammoth.
Hmm.
Most of us would be like, yay.
Ben could go around like the mammoth Avenger. Yeah, go around.
That's a superpower, to sit on people.
He's going to help people. I'm here, don't worry. Watch him make a noise. Watch him arrive around your corner. I'm here to stomp out the pedophiles. Hey, Ben. All the kids in the neighborhood go, oh, it's Ben. He's here to stomp out pedophiles.
Imagine that, huh? Then the world would be a better place.
Oh. How I just hope.
If
I'm
you don't know where this, listen,
this
if you're confused and you're only listening to part two, or you're listening to the podcast and they're not in order, you got to listen to what happened at 6 o'clock to understand where this comes from. Ben had this whole thing about woolly mammoths. You need to understand the context. All right, anything else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Katie,
by the way, I'm really sorry if you're wondering where Justice is. We couldn't get hold of him. I don't know where he is. I'm going to try and find out. Guy's just disappeared.
So I don't know this, but Katy Perry's coming to SA.
Oh, yes, she
is.
Yeah,
July.
That's true.
July.
Is anybody excited about that, by the way, before we...
No, I mean, not really, sort of. But, I mean, after the whole thing that she killed that nun.
Well, Ben, to say that she killed her is you and another conspiracy theory beginning.
I see Ben's side here slightly.
But she's added a third date. So obviously all the local nuns obviously added the date because they want to go see her now.
Oh,
listen, Katy Perry doesn't just do nun things, all right?
No.
All right, what is this? Is a clip from American Idol?
She's been labeled as a sexual predator now as well.
Ooh, what did she do?
How did you reach that point?
Right. Listen to this as a clip from American Idol. And here's Katy Perry. She's a judge on the show.
Benjamin Glaze. I'm 19 years old.
Well, hello. And what do you do for work, Benjamin?
That's Katy.
Cashier at an electronics store. Cool. But I love it because sometimes there's cute girls and they're not going anywhere without saying hi.
You get a cute girl to say hi to you because they got to check out.
Man has a racket already.
Wow.
That's Lionel Richie trying to be cool.
Have you kissed a girl and liked it?
Oh, Jesus. No, I don't know who that is, but...
try, Gareth.
Some country
try.
Singer. He's trying to be funny on the pack. I'm so glad I'm not an idol anymore.
Never been in a relationship.
Really?
I can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship.
Come here, Ben.
Come here.
All right, let me explain what's happening. Katy Perry is now standing up with her titties out, and she's calling this guy.
She doesn't have her titties out.
She does.
Gareth, you...
deep cleavage on that little top
she's
of
got like
say
bug
it,
she's like bugger all. You're objectifying women like this. She's got no cleavage whatsoever. She's just standing up.
Whatever,
got her
say.
Titties out.
So this guy called
all
Benjamin,
right, Myrtle Beach.
This guy Benjamin is moving towards the judge's desk where Katy Perry is now leaning forward with her titties out.
Oh.
Again, there.
You can't
come here right
come
now.
On.
Come here.
What, on the cheek?
Mm-hmm.
Gonna kiss him, and now
he didn't even make the smush sound.
Right, right, okay.
He kissed her on the cheek, and now they're gonna do it again.
Start over. Okay.
Oh, and then she turned, and she kissed him full on the lips. Ooh, how exciting!
All right. Okay.
This is what passes for a rating smash on American Idol these days.
It went down.
And the crowd goes wild.
And he fell down.
He went.
this point, Lionel Richie's sidling up to Katie, giving her the side eye. Like, come on, do it again. Do it to me this time.
Oh my gosh. That was so well, good. That's a first.
Sorry.
Well, cool for him.
But can you guess what happened after that?
What happened?
Well, obviously she's being labeled as a sexual predator because that guy said, I haven't kissed a girl yet. I want to kiss a girl in a relationship. And
how old?
Katy 18? Perry was his first kiss. Wow. And he's like, well, it spoiled it now because I wanted my first kiss to be my girlfriend. And then she kissed him. And now he's going, wah.
Wait a minute. Is he he's the one that's complaining?
Well, he said it, and then the internet got it. No, he was saying that he wanted his first kiss to be someone he really cared about.
Yes.
And now that was his first kiss.
Oh, no, the internet was complaining.
But now the internet's gone, what if Lionel Richie or that other guy had to do it with a 16-year-old girl?
Yes.
That would be disgusting. So it's the same thing.
Yes.
So people are trying to say that Katy Perry is a sex offender, basically.
So
that needs to be hunted out by Mammoth.
So this kid, Benjamin's friends, all said, this is so cool. Katy Perry kissed you. That's amazing. And they all agreed it didn't really count as a first kiss because it was a, you know, celebrity and it was just lip contact. There's no romantic situation. It wasn't someone he cared about. I can't believe that adults have to have these discussions. But nonetheless, he said he doesn't feel he was sexually harassed. But people on Twitter, that pillar of mental stability, people on Twitter have been quick to label the incident as a forced sexual act.
Forced sexual act.
Okay, now.
If you're on Twitter and you are involving yourself in Katy Perry on a TV show kissing a kid who's 19, he's probably, I mean, he says he hasn't had a kiss, but I don't believe him. He's probably, he's probably had anal already. Anyway.
Oh,
okay, fine. The point is, if you're involving yourself in this now by saying that this guy was subjected to a forced sexual act from Katy Perry, you have got so many problems. You need to go and sit with a psychologist 5 days a week and start sorting your life out.
Has Katy issued the statement yet that all these people then get forced to issue by their PR team to say, all right, Katy, this has turned into a big fire. We have to douse the fire.
Representatives for ABC and Katy Perry did not respond to requests from the New York Times for comment.
She was too busy trying to put her titties back in, Mabs.
Oh come on.
Or she was just trying to look for a new nanticle.
Because, you know, when Katy Perry wakes up in the morning, she puts her titties out.
Yes.
And then she goes about her day.
Oh, go watch her music videos, you people.
She gets back home.
Go watch her music videos. You tell me how much a titty she shows.
She's like a dairy mare. She just pulls them out and she just rolls them back in.
You know what? Ben is worse than Twitter. He's worse than the internet.
Yeah, because it's so easy to make me the bad guy here.
Sitting just casually doing her job with her titties out.
Oh boy.
That's what women do.
You tell me that top. That top is hardly a burqa.
I need to see this then.
Of course it's not a bloody burqa. Jeepers, you are like a pinball machine of inappropriateness here.
All right. What else do? Let's get into some serious stuff here.
That's ridiculous. Gareth.
That is
not even a hint of cleavage.
Oh, come on. She leans forward like that. Well, that's all I saw.
It's okay, sir.
That's
okay. Yeah. We've established that Gareth's got a problem. Let's not just keep rubbing his nose into it. He sees women. He sees titties.
Oh, shut up. A lot of you. You're all so full
Victoria's
of virtue.
Secret models must practically be naked.
Yes,
then,
titty mannequins.
Titties are.
All right.
Okay, all right. Should we maybe go through a few things about Stephen Hawking that maybe you didn't know about him?
That's a mind we should download.
Too late.
Yeah.
I've got to play you something. I mean, there's so much funny stuff, and I know a lot of people think this is so insensitive and so terrible, but a lot of people said that this is the final words from Stephen Hawking. You ready?
Okay. Uh-oh.
Hang on. Let me just get this going properly. Hang on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the joke started early.
Look,
the joke started early.
I loved the work Stephen Hawking did. I loved the fact that we were blessed to have this human being among us. But if you don't have a sense of humor, don't bring me that too soon crap either. Okay? Don't give me that. If you don't think it's funny, then don't laugh at it. Don't make everyone else fit in with your idea of what's appropriate to laugh at and what isn't. I think that's funny. And I still loved and respected Stephen Hawking. Not a simplistic binary idiot like you.
Did you know that he shared a birthday with Galileo Galilei?
Really?
Yeah, because Hawking was born on January the 8th, 1942.
Sorry.
January the 8th, 1942. 300 years to the day after the death of Galileo Galilei. So it's nice that he shared a birthday with another famous scientist.
All right, pop quiz.
Oh.
Everyone except Mabali.
No.
Who was Galileo Galilei?
He was a Portuguese astronomer.
Portuguese. Ben with his titties out.
Yeah, Ben.
Congratulations. You're exactly half right. He was an astronomer.
Oh, damn.
Keep
it.
Going. What was his important contribution?
That's
he was in big trouble with the Catholic Church. I'll give you a clue.
It must.
He also killed a nun.
It was Earth related, wasn't it? Flat round, that whole thing.
No. Close.
Stars.
Close in terms of, like, in those days, it was very rudimentary stuff. I mean, we're talking 400 years ago.
Yeah.
It had to do with what's in the middle, the sun or the earth? Which one spins around which one?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh.
So Galileo got into big trouble. The Catholic Church, the Pope at the time, said, you know, everything was made for us humans. So we're at the middle of the universe. We're in the center, and God made us, and we're the most important thing, but we're so humble, and we're in the middle of the universe, and everything in the universe, those millions and millions of stars and everything else, was all created so that the Pope can tell you not to jerk off, but we're very humble.
Yeah.
And then Galileo said, but Your Holiness, actually didn't even address the Pope, he just wrote a scientific paper, which was hard to do in those days, because you were accused of witchcraft and all kinds of things every time you opened your mouth.
Mm.
You weren't wearing a tall hat with a cross on it. And then he said, look, I've been using this telescope, very complex piece of machinery. It was like the internet of its day, because it allowed him to explore the universe.
Sure.
And he looked through the telescope and he said, I've pretty much figured out that these eclipses and things happen because we're actually orbiting around the sun and not the other way around. The sun doesn't go around us. And the Pope said, heretic!
Yeah.
And what did they say? Burn him!
At the stake.
Right, and so he quickly had to recant. Jeez. And he rushed off and said, okay, I was talking shit. Wink, wink. And now, a couple of hundred years later, the Catholic Church go, we recant. We take it back. We didn't mean to call Galileo a witch and make him recant all this stuff.
A little too late.
Yeah, too little too late. From a bunch of people who profess to know the mind of God but don't know the first thing about whether the sun is in the center or we're in the center of our little solar system. Anyway, just another lesson in hubris, thanks to Galileo Galilei. So it was 400 years to the day, huh?
300 years to the
300
day.
300 that Stephen Hawking was born on the same day.
And then he wasn't always a good student, apparently. According to Hawking, he only learned to read when he was 8 years old. This is something that he apparently revealed.
Hmm.
And he was not particularly successful until right at the end of his school career.
He couldn't read until he was 8?
That's what he said.
Really?
Apparently.
Yeah.
When did you start reading? You probably started really early. Ben, of course, learned in the wild.
Yeah.
Well, I learned when I came here.
Oh.
So Stephen Hawking was still trying to read at 6 and 7 and couldn't.
Take it down, man.
Yes, Gareth, yes.
Right.
All right. And then he...
Take it down, man.
Okay. He reportedly also had a weakness for strippers and strip
clubs. Yeah, this is my kind of guy.
He was a regular...
Get the titties out.
He was that's all.
That was what his computer was saying in the strip club.
Because he was apparently a regular at a place called Stringfellows Club in London.
Yes, and why shouldn't he have been?
Yeah, well, I mean, come on, who hasn't been into a strip club? He believed in aliens. This was explained in a web documentary titled Stephen Hawking's Favorite Places.
Now, hold on. This is where the meat... Mubs, I can't believe you said... All right. This is where he says something uncontroversial like, there could be life out there.
Yes.
And everyone goes, oh, he believes in aliens!
Yes. To quote exactly what he said, if aliens ever visit us, I think the outcome would be much as when Christopher Columbus first landed in America, which didn't turn out very well for the American Indians. And that was another thing about him, is he had quite the sense of humor.
Oh, the best. Did you ever see that clip of him at a serious science convention?
No.
And then someone asks a question about, you know, black hole and the event horizon, and he answers that. And then someone says to him, listen, Rob Kardashian and Black China, blah, blah, blah. Would this affect, in terms of chaos theory, of the butterfly effect, all that? And he goes, ah, finally, a sensible question. What a guy.
There was a meme that I saw yesterday. Well, not a meme, but pictures from an interview that he was doing with one of these late night talk show hosts who's originally from the UK but now works in the US. Yeah. And the talk show host asks Hawking, so, you know, let's talk about parallel universes. If such a thing did exist, does that mean that there is a universe out there where I am smarter than you? And Hawking said, yes. It's probably also the same universe where you are funny. Because he's because
that's
he's
such a great answer.
Because he's a comedian.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love this guy.
He's a comedian as well. So he also wrote a children's book, apparently. Mm-hmm. It's called Key to the Universe.
Yes,
it tells the story of a young boy who befriends his physicist neighbor and then goes on adventures in outer space with him.
This is what his daughter was here in South Africa for last year when we interviewed her.
Yes.
She came out here and she was, and they've actually made the book, they've translated that and another couple of books into a series on science that's for kids, and they've translated into Zulu, Sotho, Setswana, Xhosa. So you can actually read Stephen Hawking's theories in any of those languages as a kid and learn about science from an early age. It's terrific.
Hmm. I wonder how many languages around the world that book has been translated into, because you'd think that it's a global book.
Isn't it great that finally someone's doing it into Xhosa and Zulu and Tswana and Sotho? Huh? True. About time.
Phone calls, we get your phone calls. We get your phone calls every day.
And he recorded this for us.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember, Mubs? We had Stephen Hawking come in and record a phone calls song for us. He was very good, very musical.
Sure, I remember that day.
Phone calls, we get your phone calls. We get your phone calls every day. Phone calls, we get your phone calls. We get your phone calls.
All right, there we go. This is our tribute to Stephen Hawking. It's unconventional. What do you expect?
People were also like freaking out over the coincidence of the fact that he died on the 14th of March, which is Pi Day, Pi Day.
3.1415926535897932856.
Yeah. Casually that number, because it's the third month and the 14th day, and it was Albert.
Oh, that's clever. And I didn't know
that. That's why it's Pi Day. Did you just think it was the... Oh, finally, for the first time, I taught you something.
I wondered why.
The 14th of March is also Albert Einstein's birthday. And Albert Einstein died at the age of 76, and so did Stephen Hawking.
It's a conspiracy, right?
A lot of connecting of the dots.
But I think like with any day, you can sort of pull some sort of coincidence and similarity. Yeah.
Well, one of the strippers wants to pay tribute to him. She's on the line. One of the girls from Stringfellows, who was a regular fan of Stephen Hawking and would dance for him at the strip club, Stringfellows in London. Go ahead, ma'am.
You use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
I'm sorry. I don't think that was the stripper. I apologize. Must have been a crossed line.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound right.
Anyway, it would have been nice to have had a tribute from a stripper because, you know, Stephen liked them. And why not? He was a full-blooded male.
Okay. I don't want to be crass.
What a great guy. I mean, this is a life worth celebrating. A lot of people go, oh, you know, we got to be all reverent and serious. He wasn't serious. He wasn't ever reverent. He didn't want to be treated like he was superb or special or genius. He had a great sense of humor. and he contributed massively to humankind, far more than any of these people who'd be upset by that goodbye message from Stephen Hawking that I played you earlier.
And we're done.
I just didn't see that one coming. Okay.
All right.
Could you not have? Could they not have given him like updated software? I'm sure that's like he Windows.
Had, don't you worry. He had great software. All right.
Okay.
All right.
I'm just worried. Maybe don't you that's worry. Why.
All right. Thank you. Let's wrap it up for this morning. We got our interview with Jordan Peterson, probably the most famous academic after Stephen Hawking this week in the world. Canadian academic. Let me tell you quickly. Let's do the unnews and then I'll tell you who Jordan Peterson is. You can listen to the interview straight after that, huh? How's that for a deal? So, Cyril Ramaphosa is starting to have some tough days in Parliament, land aside. Jacob Zuma's lawyer fees are a hot topic for him right now. The president says if the courts feel that Zuma must pay back the money on his legal fees, then he must. But he also added that from personal experience, Ud Jacob is not much of a payer, and now that the Guptas are out of the country, we should probably just move on. In other news, Prince George apparently really wants to join the police force when he grows up. Though the media think this is a cute story, the Queen was quick to slap him in the face and tell him that his ancestors didn't steal the known world so he could protect peasants that inhabit it.
How dare you!
And then finally, Rassie Erasmus is planning to meet with ex-Springbok coaches in the coming weeks. The monumental meeting is apparently about brainstorming troubles that have come with the position in the past, but actually Rassie just wants to get them a round table to boast about how much money he's making out of SARU now that he's in charge and in charge and in charge. So, Jordan Peterson, and this is really one of those interviews that I've been looking forward to for a long time. We've been in discussion on Twitter for some time. He's actually turned into a massive internet celebrity. He's a former professor at Harvard, and he's now a professor of psychology at the University of Toronto. He's become a cult celebrity for his calm and articulate dismantling of political correctness and reactionary politics from the left and the right. He's particularly popular with young men because of his message of self-sufficiency and self-worth, which can be summarized as, take responsibility for your own life. He's written a book called 12 Rules of Life, An Antidote to Chaos. It's an interesting read, and it spurned a meme of interesting people giving their 12 rules for life of their own. But the Stoics would probably love this. What would their 12 rules be? Well, no one can say for sure, but here's a stab at it. Live as if you died but were resuscitated and every minute was a gift. Every person you meet is an opportunity for kindness. Don't read for show, read to be better. Be forgiving of others but don't demand forgiveness for yourself. Try to hold as few opinions as possible. Pick a Cato and judge each difficult situation with what would that person do. Practice good spending habits. Always consider the worst case scenario. Keep a list of what you've learned from other people and remember to thank them for it. Get up early every day, as early as you can. Take a cold shower every now and then. And if it's not right to not do it, it's not true to talk about it. So there we go. Just a few of those rules. His book is terrific. I can't recommend it enough. Jordan B. Peterson on cliffcentral.com. That's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's right around the corner.
This is CliffCentral.com.